number two, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday. NFL Combine getting underway in Indianapolis. A lot of coaches and GMs doing their talk. We say hello now to ESPN NFL analyst and Innsworth football coach Tim Hasselbeck, who joins us. Tim, what's up?
What's up? How are you guys doing your own combine today?
Yeah, Joe's going to try and bench press.
We'll try to do 135, Tim. Yeah. It's been a while, so see what I can do.
Yeah, we're going to see what we can do there. Do you have a combine over there at Innsworth?
No combine over here. Maybe because my combine experience was, you know, it just was – left a lot to be desired in my eyes. I was one of the guys that, like – you know, they kind of position it like, hey, you know, you're going to throw in the quarterbacks, throw into all that stuff. But how about, like, just get extra exposure and, you know, throw with the running backs and the tight ends and even the defensive back drills. So come in early and do that, which, like, you know, when you're that age and you're easily convinced, you're like, okay, yeah, that'll help me. But really all you do is you just wear yourself out throwing a bunch of drills where no one's paying any attention to you. It was like, yeah, it was probably not the smartest move.
So here's my question to start. Robert Saleh spoke today. He said this was the first combine he's been at since 2019. And I feel like that's kind of become the trend that, you know, coaches and, you know, some do. Some want to be at everything and some don't. My thing would be, wouldn't it be beneficial to be able to go and sit in the same room with the kid and look them in the eye and have a conversation?
Yeah, I think it's weird now, some of the guys. It's not like you're asking these coaches to – who have demanding schedules. I mean, I think, you know, in fairness, you know, the season's long. The NFL season can be demanding. And so there probably are things they don't need to do anymore. But I would think because it's just such the center of everything going on and because it's, like you said, you can be in that room and, you know, like kind of bang for your buck in terms of go to Indy and be able to sit in interviews with prospects that you feel like sitting in there with, that feels to me like it would be worth your time.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck today. You know, Tim, it's funny talking about throwing to receivers. Was it last year that Tyler, Shuck, yeah, mm-hmm. was throwing to, and he was like hitting guys like in their ankles and guys were getting mad. I don't need that pressure in my life, so I wouldn't have done that.
See, you know, I here's the way I look at it is that if you're a coach evaluating a guy, you should know you're going into it. Like, he doesn't even know these guys. Like, I'll tell you my combine experience. My college coach or coordinator, Dana Bible, said to me, he's like, listen, they like complete the passes. So like, you know, don't get up there with a guy who runs a go route and, you know, overthrow him by 15 yards, you know, like complete is just like complete passes, like do that. And, you know, at the time I'm like, yeah, that's good advice. Right? That's really good advice. So here I am playing college football on the East Coast in Boston. And, you know, you go to the combine, there's kids from all over the country. And I look out there and there's a guy and he's got these yellow track tights on. And this is before, you know, people were wearing the tights and stuff. Like everyone was wearing grays and T-shirts and stuff like that back then. And this guy's got these yellow, you know, tights on. Well, he runs a go route and I underthrow him, like, by a lot. You know, he's kind of waiting for the football and stuff. And I'm thinking, well, I mean, that's what my college coach told me to do. I was thinking it's good advice. But I think really what it made me do, it made me look like I couldn't reach the guy. Ooh. Now, the guy ended up being Chad Johnson, you know, Ocho Cinco. But I don't know that. He played at, like, Oregon State or somewhere. I never saw an Oregon State game. I had no idea who he was. So I say all of that to say that coaches know – like, you've never thrown with this guy before. He may not run a good route. Like, so I think if you are at least looking at it through that lens as somebody that's evaluating quarterbacks in that process, like, I think you'll understand that there are going to be some misses.
Yeah, I know. And that's the thing. It was like Tyler, you know, so guys were getting mad at Tyler Shuck and his, you know, it's like one of those things was like, I didn't really want to be here and do this. Mendoza's come out and said, I'm an Indy. I'll go for the interviews, but I'm not throwing. Smart move?
Yeah. Yeah. For when you don't have anything to gain, which he doesn't, he's going to be the first pick, then there's no sense in doing it. If it can benefit you, Tyler Shuck, Ty Simpson, you know, any of these other guys that aren't projected to go in the first round or first half of the first round, whatever, you know, their grade looks like, then you should go and compete. Like that's definitely, you know, how I, you know, would approach it and would advise people to approach it.
Sure.
And look, just because you go and you throw great at the combine doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to help you. When my year at the combine, Michael Vick did not throw because, you know, he was going to be the number one overall pick. Drew Brees did throw. I didn't think he actually threw the ball. You know, I didn't think he threw it well. The guy who I thought probably had the best day throwing the football at the combine my year was Josh Booty, the former LSU quarterback that had been a pro baseball player. And I want to say he went in the fifth or sixth round and maybe lasted a year or two. So, you know, it's one of these things where it's just one piece of the evaluation puzzle. Because it's an event, I think we talk about it and make it feel like it's bigger than it actually is.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny. Chase and I are both on the Reuben Bain trend. I mean, we want this guy to come here. And I'm looking forward to seeing how the negativity hits him in Indianapolis. Oh, his burst wasn't there. His hands are small. His arms aren't that long. And I was telling Chase, for me, put on the four games in the college football playoffs and then just shut your mouth, right? I mean, you watch at that high level, Tim, of how well he played, but you go to the combine, all they're going to do is come back with negatives on him. I don't see the value in that.
Yeah, I will say that, you know, the process is typically hard on everybody, you know, unless you're a guy that just, you know, tests and measures, you know, in a way that just is a massive benefit to you. It's an unforgiving process. So now look, I don't know what they're going to say about Reuben Bain. I don't, you know, obviously like the Will Campbell stuff from a year ago was the arm length could end up being a thing for him. But here's what I'll tell you about, you know, my experience, you know, kind of being around him, I guess it would have been 4 years ago-ish. He was a highly recruited kid coming out of high school, so much so that Miami was paying him a lot of money straight out of high school. And he started at defensive end as a freshman. And everybody there, I remember talking to Jason Taylor before a game, and he's like, you have no idea how good this guy's going to be. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? I mean, it's Miami. There have been a lot of good guys. And he was like, this guy is going to be as good as anybody that we've ever had here. Like that's, and I'm like, you're saying that already? And he's like, I'm saying it already. So I just think that, you know, I believe his brother got added to the coaching staff there at Miami, and then he delivered, you know, once he got to college. So, you know, I do think that I'm sure that there will be things that are said about him in this process that people aren't crazy about, you know, in terms of measurables or whatever it may be. But, you know, I think what you're getting at is, you know, the guy came in to a massive program and played at a really high level every opportunity he got.
Hey, I want to ask you, this is a more of a technical question, and I never saw this before Tom Brady got in the league. Tom Brady used to point out the Mike linebacker before every play. Yeah. Why did he do that? I don't know if your brother did that or if you did that. Yeah. Nobody ever did that when I played.
So basically, you know, there's definitely an era, probably, you know, early 2000s where, you know, a lot more got put on the quarterback's plate in terms of setting protections and then also setting like front identification in the run game.
Okay.
And, you know, in many respects took it out of the center's hands for, you know, for most teams and put it in the quarterback's hands. And so, you know, depending on if the run scheme, you know, would, you know, have, you know, okay, it would send the line a certain direction, basically, you know, based on the mic call. And in pass protection, a similar thing. So if the offensive line had the four down and the Mike linebacker, and you Mike number 50 is the Mike linebacker. Uh-huh. Well, like, then they're working to that guy. If the pass protection was one where they block the four down lineman in the will and you set 50 as the Mike, well, they know, you know, that they're sliding to 49, you know, and so they just, you know, that's how you do it. So really it was, you know, it became probably most prominent between Peyton and Tom Brady,
right,
and Drew Brees and guys that could really control the game where they were doing it. Now it's pretty much every quarterback is asked to do it that way.
It's a lot on a quarterback, man.
Hey, and that's why, you know, we run them out of town when they stink. You know what I mean? I mean, pay them all the big bucks. That's what I'm
We'll have more with Tim Hasselbeck coming up next here on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday, continuing with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, who joins us now. Nick Sirianni was asked earlier today about A.J. Brown, and he said he's not sure if he'll be back. Do you think A.J. Brown is on another team to start the 26th season?
Yeah, I do. I mean, because if you weren't going to trade him, you wouldn't answer the question that way. And he's been so productive. The fact that there's all of this, you know, kind of smoke out there on a player at his age that's been, you know, as productive as he's been, who quite frankly is now on a contract that is reasonable for his level of production based on what's happened with receiver contracts. Yeah, they clearly feel like a change of scenery is going to be better for them in Philadelphia. So I do think he'll be on the move.
Where do you think the best fit for him would be?
I think there are a lot of really good fits. Look, making the connection to New England, I think makes sense. The relationship with Vrabel knowing kind of what he's getting personality-wise, and then the fact that it's a massive need there in New England. Like, they need a number one wide receiver, a true, good, physical number one wide receiver. I think you could end up saying, you know, similar things about, you know, a bunch of teams, really. I think there are other teams. The Bills would be in the market for a number one receiver. A lot of people have linked the Broncos to want to be in the market for a player like that. And so, and then let's just say, for example, that, you know, Mike Evans is not in Tampa. Well, Tampa's then going to need one. So, you know, the market will be strong in terms of people that would want A.J. Brown. Now, I don't think that the Eagles are going to just give him away for nothing, but I think they're signaling to people, come get a number one wide receiver.
What do you think the market's going to be for Kirk Cousins when he's released?
Yeah, I think it's probably a little bit like Aaron Rodgers, you know, when he was going through it. So not a priority free agent signing. So I guess what that would mean is if we look at the quarterbacks that are going to be available, I think it would be a wait and see. It would be, you know, after the draft, it would be kind of an environment where, you know, okay, the dust has settled. So, and I'm not positive that he would find a place where he walks in and he's for sure the day one starter. Now, as teams maybe go through their process, take Arizona, for example. If Arizona goes through their process and says, look, we don't want to invest and build around Malik Willis, we're moving on from Kyler Murray, we just need someone that is looking to be in a starter right now, and we can get him on a reasonable deal, well, maybe Kirk Cousins would do that.
What about the latest reclamation project being Mac Jones? I'm reading now there might be some offers for him. I mean, is he that next Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, Tim?
I don't think there are guys like that every year. You know, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, but who was the one prior to them?
Rich Gannon?
Tannehill? No, I mean, like, you know, Tannehill was.
Yeah.
Right? But who, like, you know, you just go through them. Like, there isn't one every year.
Right.
So, you know, I think the idea that like somebody completely changes. Do I think Mac Jones is as bad as he was in New England? No, but do I think that, you know, he's going to, you know, sign a contract that is, you know, a clear starter contract? I don't think that will happen. And I, you know, I think, you know, his path to becoming a free agent and be out there is different than like where Malik Willis sits right now.
Would you rather have Malik Willis or Mac Jones if you're Miami?
I think you would probably rather Malik Willis. One, you don't have to give up anything to get him. And, you know, in this round of free agency, and I think it just comes down to really what this is going to boil down to, I believe, is who's interested in Malik Willis.
Right.
If there's more than one team, then I might pump the brakes a little bit. But if you're the Dolphins and you're the only one, well, then be smart about it. It reminds me a little bit. I don't know if you guys remember. It was years ago, and Ryan Fitzpatrick was going to be the starter at the Jets. And he was coming off a very good year the year before. But there was no other seat for him in the, you know, in the musical chairs of starting quarterbacks. And so like, if we look at it right now, what are the openings? You know, the openings are the Dolphins, the Cardinals, and the Jets, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and the Raiders, but the Raiders is going to fill. So those are the only places. Well, you know, Tua and Kyler are going to end up somewhere else. So, like, let's just say Kyler gets released by the Cardinals and ends up at the Jets. All right, well, the Jets is now full and Kyler is going to be on a prove-it deal. All right, so now you're down to two teams. And if Arizona isn't willing to get into the Malik Willis sweepstakes, well, then if you are the Miami Dolphins, like you're not paying Malik Willis whatever people are saying, you know, $40 million a year.
Right,
you know, you're
right.
Saying like, hey, look, this is what we're going to do. It's really going to be like a 1 or 2 year thing, and you're going to have to prove it to them.
What are they going to do with J.J. McCarthy? I mean, is this going to be the albatross that's on Kevin O'Connell forever? I mean, Darnold wins a Super Bowl. McCarthy's not good. I mean, what are they going to do?
Well, first off, I'd like you guys to bring back the tape of me last year saying that I would build around Sam Darnold.
Yep.
He was at the time a 27-year-old
sure
that had thrown 28 touchdowns. Look, I'm always taking the guy that I've seen do it at this level rather than the guy that we think maybe can one day possibly do it. You know,
yep.
Look, I think that scenario is one where, all right, let's say, you know, kind of the dust settles after the draft. Let's pretend Raiders draft a quarterback. The Jets take Kyler Murray. Malik Willis goes to the Dolphins, and Ty Simpson ends up in Arizona. All right, well, now you're Kyler Murray, and you're looking for a landing spot. And they're like, hey, man, why don't you come here, be a one-year, $10 million deal, and you'll be one of the highest-paid backups in the league, and we're going to let you compete with him. We're going to let you compete with J.J. McCarthy. Like, to me, like, that's where, or maybe even say something similar to Kirk Cousins. Hey, 1 year, $10 million, but we need to win games. You want to come back to Minnesota? So I think that's what happens there. It's basically Daniel Jones all over again.
Are we, let me ask, now, it's actually a serious question for you one time. Are we running out of good quarterbacks, Tim?
I don't think so. I think you can make a list of a dozen quarterbacks that are really good. I mean, I really think you can. And so, you know, the top guys are the top guys that everyone can, you know, can name. Look, I think, would you consider Bo Nix a top 12 quarterback? I think he's really good. You know, you look at what Dak Prescott has done throughout his career. It's a really good quarterback. I think we've got good quarterback play. It does seem when, you know, you get to, you know, some guys that haven't proved it yet, you wonder, okay, like, you know, what can you win it with that guy?
Right.
And look, I think enough teams have proven that you can. You just need starter level play, and you need a great defense.
Well, that makes sense. I was going to go back real quick to the Reuben Bain thing. When you were quarterbacking and the other team had a really good defensive end, how cognizant were you of that guy on every single play? Not just a pass play, but a running, but every play. How cognizant were you of this guy? And sometimes you might overthink, like, oh, my God, this guy is so good. How much is that pressure involved with a quarterback thinking about that guy?
You know, I think there's a fine line with that. Way we would always approach it, or places I've been approach it, was if you knew you were overmatched somewhere, you know, then obviously run game stuff where you didn't have to run at him, you won it. And then in the pass game stuff, it just was more about the quarterback understanding, all right, hey, man, like clock in your head, like you know that this has to be a little bit different because you know we can't hold up. And as it relates to Bain, think of that Indiana-Miami game. Indiana couldn't block them, couldn't block them at all. And it was clear that the quarterback knew he was going to have to play with some type of anticipation to not get stuck holding the football. And I think that was one of the best things that you got to see from Mendoza in that matchup was that he's getting his brains beat in. He knows that he's not protected. He's not hurting his team by having the catastrophic play because of it.
Right.
And, you know, they're staying in the fight. I was impressed with how he handled that.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us here on the program. One of our texters, we've talked about Will Levis with you quite a bit, but one of our texters has asked, I mean, do you think it's better for him to try and move him sooner rather than later, or – should the Titans hang on to him, see what he does in the offseason program, training camp, and then go from there?
I don't know that moving him sooner rather than later is the move, because I think you probably prefer somebody to be a little bit desperate. Because right now, everybody's looking at it and saying, well, could get Kirk Cousins, could get Kyler Murray. Like, who knows? Like, you don't know what's going to happen. Or, hey, you know, there could be somebody we draft that we like. Whereas, you know, you let this go, a team doesn't get who they wanted in the draft, and then they, you know, end up, you know, having an injury or whatever it is, and they're a little more desperate, I think you get more value. Remember a couple of years ago when Antonio Pierce was the head coach of the Raiders?
Mm-hmm.
Their plan was not to go into the season with Aiden O'Connell as their starter. But they got stuck. And so, you know, I think that can happen to people. So I would not be in a rush. You know, I would assume that he's much healthier now coming off of the shoulder injury. And I think that would be a market for him. You know, not as strong as, you know, Mac Jones's market, but I think there would absolutely be a market for Will Levis, and maybe even put him in a situation that's more attractive than the one he's in.
Hey, real quick, can you pass our number along to Jason Priestley? I just found out that his kids went to Innsworth. We love to have him on the show. And since you're the social coordinator at Innsworth, do you mind doing that for us?
How did you just figure that out? Were you at the Peach Pit? How did you figure that out?
Don't tell me you didn't fangirl over Jason Priestley at Innsworth campus, right? Come on.
I coached his son in fifth and sixth grade football years ago, and really nice guy, great member of the community.
Yeah. So are you going to do it or no? Probably not, right?
Probably not.
Who was asking? Chase or you?
Chase is asking.
Listen, Chase and I's relationship changed when he told me he gave you my number. I was like, hey, dude, what are you doing?
It's my bad.
All right, that's great. I just found out last night. I was stalking Mr. Priestley, and I found out that he's a member of the Innsworth community. I had no idea.
Fine member. Yes, really good guy. Yeah, and like a lot of people, I probably moved from California to Nashville.
There you go, buddy.
There you go. Tim, appreciate it as always. We'll talk next week.
All right, see you, fellas.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and Innsworth football coach, joining us here on the program. We'll react to some of that coming up next, and also hear a little bit of what Robert Saleh had to say at the Combine. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game.